Dallas-Fort Worth. KTBK Sherman Denison. KTDK Sanger. Norm in New York, Mickey at Valley Ranch, and Reiner and Dan McDowell at the Varsity Club in Frisco. Pick-by-pick coverage of the NFL Draft begins tomorrow morning at 11 on Sports Radio 1310. The Ticket. Never got a chance to say. We've acquired for life.
One in five. We're going to get in touch with Norm in a little bit here. Do a little draft talk with him, we think. But first, let's talk to some of the people from the Fort Worth Zoo who are with us now. And they have brought some animals up here for us to look at today. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Oh, whoa.
Are they on, Psycho?
All right, there you go. Can we turn the man on here? Hi there.
How you doing? I'm Sean.
You're Sean?
This is Lindsay with me.
Hi. Greetings. How are you?
Good. How are y'all?
Good.
Wonderful. Well, we appreciate you guys having us on. We know you like the Fort Worth Zoo, and we thought bringing some animals up here might be great on a Friday.
Yes, we do like the Fort Worth Zoo, and we're very honored that that you chose the little ticket to favor us with these wonderful creatures. What prompted you guys to do this?
Well, I've been listening for a while, actually. I would be considered a P1, and I've never met a radio station that had more animal names than this one. In fact, I've learned more about animals probably from you guys than any other radio station. This week, I learned what I think it was a toothless street urchin was. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Something like that. So, we learned a lot about the animals, and we wanted to bring them up here today. Also, we have Zoo Run happening. We got some sports, kind of sportsy items that are happening at the zoo that we want to talk about sometime today as well.
Well, why don't you go ahead and do that now, and then you can tell us about the animals.
Great. Well, tomorrow we have our Zoo Run. If anybody is interested in running, we have the 7th Annual Zoo Run out there at the Fort Worth Zoo. If you haven't signed up, from 6:30 to 7:45, you can. At 8 o'clock, we have a one-mile run and then a 5K that happens right after that, and portions of that goes right through the Fort Worth Zoo.
Excellent.
Yeah.
That is excellent. Now, if anybody wanted to get involved in that, how would they?
They can call the zoo at 817-759-7500 today, or I'm having
tomorrow,
a penguin fight here.
Actually, would be better to sign up. Last-minute registrations is only $25. You can register from 6:30 to 7:30 tomorrow morning.
Man, we've got battling penguins going on right here in front of us, don't we?
These are black-footed penguins from Africa, and these are also known as jackass penguins because they bray like a donkey. I'm going to see real quick if they'll do it for us. Hey, Jack. Hey, Jack. Oh, not yet. Come here, guys.
Jackass.
Can you hear that?
Yeah.
One's running away and one's braying. Let me take this one off and put it on the floor.
They're fighting.
They're competing for a mate.
Grego, you would die if you saw these. By the way, Grego is back. He's at his house. He's having back problems.
I feel bad because we know Grego really likes animals. How you doing, Grego? Is he listening?
That's good. How are you guys?
Because Grego and I have probably been to the Fort Worth Zoo. I've been there hundreds and hundreds of times. It's the zoo I
guarantee you, I've been there a minimum of 100 times. Minimum.
Oh, that's great.
It's fabulous. It is the absolute best zoo. I've been to the San Diego Zoo, and they're kind of 1A and 1B.
How'd you like that? Was San Diego nice? Did you go to the Wild Animal Park, or did you just go to the zoo?
We went to both, didn't we?
Did we go to both? I know we went to the zoo, at least.
Yeah. They do a great job, and they've also done a great job marketing. Remember Joan Embry was out there as well?
Right. She visited us at the Super Bowl one year when we were out there. Yeah.
She's a neat lady. I worked at the Columbus Zoo for a while. You guys may have heard of Jack Hanna before. He did a great job marketing that zoo. And this Fort Worth is ready to take off. It's in such a nice area down there, right by Colonial Country Club, right down there in a nice area of shaded oaks and cottonwoods. So yeah, we've got a nice location and some great animals there.
Now, these penguins are about, as the penguin attacks the microphone.
I need to describe what that is, because they get their name Jackass Penguin because they bray like a donkey.
Jackass.
So when they're calling out for a mate or basically greeting another penguin, that's what they do. And they do sound like, you know, like a farm animal when they're doing that.
And for those who are not by their video monitor, we do have actual penguins up here on the table.
How tall are they? About 2 feet, foot and a half?
Yeah, about a foot and a half. This would put them in the mid-range of penguins. I don't think a lot of people know that there's 17 different kinds of penguins. We always see the big ones at SeaWorld, and we think they're found in the ice and cold. When I was growing up, Chili Willy was a cartoon. They had them playing around with polar bears. There's no penguins, actually, that are found up north. They're all south of the equator. This one's found in Africa. The large ones, like the emperor, are down in Antarctica, where it's, you know, 30, 40 below temperatures. These guys can withstand great temperatures, 70, 80 degrees, no problem for this bird.
Well, it's amazing, too, because we had him out outside the studio, and you were out there with him, and as soon as you turn around and walk away, they follow you. They'll just walk right behind you, like you're their leader.
I think they mate for life. I know a lot of birds do, and I think what happens is they get an attachment to certain people, just like parrots do. And, you know, there's nothing going on with that. But I can tell you that these guys are very intelligent birds. And, they'll, like you said, they'll follow you. When they see you, they almost look right up to you, so they recognize different people. So, Corby, if you come up there, it may not follow you quite the same as it would Lindsay or myself or someone else that they recognize.
And it's got fur.
Feathers. Feathers, actually.
Those are feathers?
Believe it or not, feathers. If you
it's more like fur.
It does. It looks like a seal. It looks like seal fur. And if you were to put a quarter on its back, they say, you trace that outline, 300 little tiny feathers, and they're all waterproof. So when they dive down 200 feet, it waterproofs them. They can go hunt, and then they can swim 20 miles an hour. And when sharks and leopard seals are your predators, you've got to be very quick to elude them.
And they're cool with warm weather.
Pretty good, yeah.
See, we've always thought of penguins as cold weather
Absolutely,
birds.
And that's because I think we always think about the Antarctic penguins, the emperors, the very big ones. But there are penguins, Mike, at the equator, at the Galapagos Islands.
Wow, I had no idea.
Is there one behind you?
Yeah, there's one just roaming around.
Whoa,
yeah.
I'm here I am rolling around in a chair.
One more time.
Wow.
That might be a good drop later. I'm going to put this on the ground. Is that right? We let him walk around?
Oh, yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
Because we have the state mammal of Texas here, and you all know what that is?
No, what is that?
The armadillo.
The armadillo.
Me and Grego know, right, Greg?
Armadillo.
Ah, there they are.
The nine-banded armadillo. This one's named Scooter. This was found actually in a dog's mouth in Fort Worth.
No, really?
When it could fit in the palm of your hand when it was a baby, and now it's, well, you'll have to see on the website, I guess, but it's probably, I don't know, 8 pounds?
It's hair. It's got hair, like a beard or something.
Look at that. Hair on the bottom. It's got some other stuff on the bottom as well. This is a hard shell right here. That's a carapace. It's called the nine-banded armadillo. They have terrible eyesight, but they have a great sense of smell. I went to Arkansas on Monday, and I saw about 50
How's Arkansas looking
not
this year?
One alive, though, because you never see them. They're always found on the side of the road, and mainly because when they get scared, they'll jump 2 or 3 feet up in the air, and then they, instead of getting straddled by the cars, a lot of times it ends badly for the...
You ever seen them do that?
No.
Jump up in the air?
I've seen them jump in the air and actually hop around. Now, what we're going to feed them here, and you may hear this.
Oh, my Lord.
These are worms, and they're insectivores, and this is what they do in your garden.
Kind of slurp them up like spaghetti.
That is the sound of an armadillo eating, folks.
Basically, they have huge claws, and they'll slurp up the worms. They'll eat them. If there's bugs in the garden, people like them. However, they also till up your ground a little bit more. So it's kind of a love-hate relationship. If you have a garden, you want it to grow, great. If you want a natural insectivore, have one of these guys in there. But they do some damage.
What do you mean,
well.
Like as a pet?
Well, no. You know, you can attract them in your garden in some areas, I guess, people say. However, because of the natural bugs, you're going to find them in there that might browse on your tomatoes or something else. If you have these guys in there, that's gonna be a food source for them.
All right, how long do the penguins live? To get back to them real quick.
About 20 years in captivity. 20 years.
So outside of captivity, you really don't know?
Yeah, it goes down because, you know, people always talk about the wild versus captivity. In the wild, you have danger, you have predators, you have disease, you have sickness. So in most cases, animals that live in zoos live longer than they do in the wild.
And they're fed every day.
And they're fed every day. So basically, 20 years in the wild, it's going to go down in captivity. 20 years in the captivity, in the wild, a little bit less. Great white sharks will prey on penguins. Leopard seals, believe it or not, there's seals that are carnivorous that will feed on them as well. So they have a lot to face when they're out there trying to make it every day.
You know, that is not unlike the way the cobra eats. What that armadillo's got working
just
right there.
Just sticks his nose down in there and roots around.
All he did is he poured out a bucket of worms or a little ramekin full of worms and dirt, and the armadillo had to sift through the dirt to get to the worms. And will he eat all day?
Yeah, he will eat all day. And, you know, I will tell you this. And Lindsay, I did not experience this on the way over. If this thing ever goes to the bathroom, it'll clear out a room like you can't believe. I worked around some cats that I thought were just horrendous. If you ever smell this little thing, the size of a football, what it can produce, it would.
Sean and I took this animal to New York, and we didn't think we were going to get
horrible. Kept in the hotel room for 3 days.
Oh my God!
And we had about 6 animals up in a hotel in New York, and this thing let loose, and it was everybody for the door.
Wow, we feel the same way about Mike.
Mike Reiner.
We were talking about the zoo a little bit earlier. We're adding on. We have a new exhibit opening up in May for Memorial Day weekend. We're getting Parrot Paradise. It's a lorikeet exhibit. It's really neat because it's interactive. You can actually walk into the aviary and the birds will fly down and drink nectar out of a cup. They have a really cool tongue that has a brush on the end of it, and that's what they use to slurp up the nectar.
Wow.
One of the things we're trying to do is get real interactive. So literally, Mike or Corby, if you walked in there, you would have a cup of nectar in your hand or a bunch of seeds on a stick, and these birds just flock down. Your arms, your shoulders, your head is covered in cockatiels, budgies, lorikeets, you name it.
Now, is it...
Pterodactyls?
Is it creepy?
Corby birds? There'll be Corby birds all over the place.
Is it creepy for, like, kids? Would they get scared?
No, the birds are very small.
Oh, okay, okay.
Cockatiel type size. However, people who are a little bit nervous around birds, like I am, and need to take a deep breath before they walk in, but they're beautifully colored. It's very interactive. People love it when they're able to feed the animals. That's why the petting zoos are always so popular.
All right, now, what you got here?
This is, what is, Grego's nickname is the big, huggy
big
bear,
Big
right?
huggy,
yeah. huggy bear. This is a honey bear.
Big it's a little huggy bit bear.
Oh, my God.
This is a kinkajou or a honey bear, and actually they have about 4-inch long tongues, and what they'll do is they will go into beehives in Central America, and they'll use that tongue to extract the honey. Now, when they do that, they have to dig in with their claws. I'm going to show you right here. Look at that.
Look at that tongue, Mike.
Isn't that cool?
Very Gene Simmons-esque.
It is.
How would you describe this animal, the way it looks, though? I mean, what is it akin to?
You know what? It's if I said raccoon, people would have a different perception there that are listening right now. It looks more monkey or lemur-like.
Yeah,
certainly not what you think of as a bear.
Not at all. Not at all. And it's got, I guess, maybe not even the fur. There are some bear species that have a little bit smaller, tighter fur. This thing is golden brown.
Big
in color.
Huggy
it has
bear.
A tail that literally can wrap around a prehensile tail. Can you see that?
Oh, I have one.
It's nocturnal, so he's active at night, so that probably...
And this is really a bear, huh? This is part of the bear family?
It's a nickname for it, Mike. It's actually in the raccoon family. So it's more closely related to raccoons, which are omnivorous, that we have in our own backyards, than it is a bear or a monkey. So kind of confusing.
He's holding the tube of what is that stuff?
Honey.
It's a test tube of honey.
It's a test tube of honey, and now he's holding it with both of his paws. He just dropped it on the table there. Maybe you heard that.
Now, is he full grown?
He's almost full grown. He's probably going to fill out a little bit more. These things have huge, huge canines. I'm going to give him a grape. You want to feed him? You want him on your shoulder?
I want to feed
him. Corby,
yeah,
here, take him. Give him to Corby and let him run on his shoulder.
Snake.
There we go.
Now, are you guys, what is your background? What do you have a degree in? Or do you?
Yeah, they picked me off the street a few years ago, and...
There you go, buddy.
No, actually, Lindsay's in the PR department, and her degree is in public relations. And I went to be a veterinarian, and I went to Ohio State, and that didn't pan out for me too well. And I ended up getting my degree in broadcast journalism, believe it or not.
Really?
Yeah, my father was a sportscaster in Ohio, and I never pursued it. I ended up working part-time at the Columbus Zoo, and 7 or 8 years ago, I came down here to help do some outreach programs. So
you did the right thing.
You think?
Yeah, you did.
Look at this guy, Mike. Feel how soft he is. I mean, it's unbelievable.
They do have huge canines. I should tell you that before you pick him up. However, he's not known to bite. They primarily eat fruit. However, they have the ability to inflict an awful bite. So the large canines there protect them. Little was known about them. In fact, in National Geographic recently, they had a cover story on them about how these animals hunt up at night, and they put their heads inside these big flowers and come out pollen-covered and with nectar. And so there's a lot of animals in the world that they don't know much about, and this is one of those type animals.
Not a puppy dog.
It's not a puppy dog, Mike. All right, let's...
Look at him. He's got his tail going.
You guys got a few more to show, don't you?
We have quite a few, and we have a snake quota as well. So.
Okay, good. All right, also, can we get into the whole issue of what happened over here in Dallas?
Well, you know what? I'll probably avoid it, but we can talk a little bit about it.
Okay.
So, yeah, we'll see what we can do next.
Okay.
All right, that's next here on The Ticket.
Tomorrow's stars play today on the Frisco Rough Riders Diamond. Listen to every game on the Ticket 1700 with Jimmy Christopher and Scott Garner. Brought to you by Hooters and Sports Radio 1310, The Ticket.
Good afternoon, everybody. You're listening to The Hard Line here on Sports Radio 1310, The Ticket. We have a little NFL draft talk on the way here with Norm, but we've got Sean and Lindsay from the Fort Worth Zoo in here now.
Thanks for having us on.
Well, thank you guys for doing all this. They brought some animals over here. We have looked at the penguin.
Mm-hmm.
We've looked at the honey bear.
Right.
We've looked at, what else did we look at?
Armadillo.
Yeah, the armadillo. And now, and by the way, pictures of all this will be up on the website.
Okay. Yeah.
So you can check out all this good stuff there. It'll give you something to look at on the website. Now it's the macaw's turn, right?
Yeah, can you say hello?
Hello.
Wow.
You're kidding. What is the macaw?
This is a hyacinth macaw. This is the largest, we were talking about Parrot Paradise. It's opening at the Fort Worth Zoo May 28th, is that right?
That's right.
And this guy is the largest of the parrots. So you take 350 parrot species in the world approximately, none are bigger than the hyacinth macaw. Can you say hello?
Hello.
Right. And his name is Kangen. Believe it or not, he's 23 years old, and he's going to live to be about 75. And there are tens of millions of parrots in the United States as pets. And so it's a huge thing. And can you say hello?
Uh-huh.
Good.
Hello.
Is that funny? There are tens of millions of parrots Anyways, my point is that they live a long time. This bird used to sell for $15,000 today. It's probably well over $5,000 to acquire. And they have a beak that's incredible, and you use that to crack open different types of seeds, nuts. Later on, I'm going to put it on Corey's hand and let him crack open a Brazil nut, I hope.
It's now, this is a huge, deep blue bird with yellow circles around his eyes and kind of yellow tufts down there by the lower beak.
Mm-hmm. These type of parrots, there's lots of different colors in the macaw. Some of them have a lot more red and blue. This one is almost strictly blue. The only yellow you're going to find on him is around his lower mandible or beak, around his eyes, and then actually, if you guys look real carefully here, look at his tongue. He's got a stripe, a yellow stripe right down the center of his tongue. Very beautiful, and that beak, there's nothing larger than any other parrot. This beak here is so strong, they crack open Brazil nuts, easily break a broomstick handle, easily do some serious damage to your finger if the bird doesn't happen to like it.
Boy, you should see the beak on this thing, Greg.
Oh, it's a monster,
oh, man.
Greg.
I think he just did some damage to the back of your shirt, too.
Oh, he did?
Yeah,
he's not exactly potty trained. Thanks, Danny.
Captain Doodoo.
Appreciate that. Captain Doodoo.
He's huge.
He is.
His back, his back part there? I don't know if it's his tail or whatever.
That's good. His tail feathers, right. And that's really how they keep their balance in flight. Without their tail feathers, they don't go too far. And the neat thing about this is people are taking tours down into Brazil. The ecotourism right now is helping these species in the rainforest where land is kind of going away for them. And so having people go down and tour these areas in Brazil where they're found to go down and see 50 to 100 of these parrots flocking around in the daytime, really big for the conservation of these guys.
Well, see, was that I heard it talking?
Yeah, that wasn't me.
The bird was talking?
Yeah, listen, here, we'll try this again. Here's hello. Hello.
Hello.
Hello.
Hello.
And then here's a laugh. Is that funny? Is that funny?
Not a lot of difference between that laugh and Corby's.
Okay, I'm going to put him over on Corby's arm now. And I just want you to understand that when he grabs a hold of this seed, you'll be able to hear. This is a Brazil nut that he's going to crack open with his lower mandible and not Corby's finger.
Oh, good.
Now, normally, Sean was telling us that it takes a nutcracker to get this thing open. Or a hammer.
God, he's heavy. Here you go, buddy.
The hammer.
All right, now the nut is in his mouth.
Oh, he wants to go.
Uh-oh, he's going away. Oh, no.
He wants to go back by Sean.
He jumped off Cobra's arm and is headed back over towards Sean.
He is scared to death of the Cobra, which is not bad because snakes and birds don't really get along.
Snake Cobra.
Come on.
Poor little bird.
Crack that thing, will you?
This nut is huge.
Like I said, any second now. Great radio.
Could he snap your finger?
Absolutely.
Like that?
Absolutely.
There we go.
Now we're in business. So that was a Brazil nut just cracked with their beak. And the odd thing is that in the wild, their nuts and seeds and that grow on trees, they will basically grow stronger casings over the years to protect themselves from these birds' beaks. And so they've proven that genetically, the beaks will get stronger and stronger over the generations so that they can continue to keep up with their food and their prey items.
Now, what kind of predators in the wild do those things fear, or are there any?
Snake, definitely. Snakes up there that would be up in the trees.
Probably bigger birds too, right?
Could be, definitely. That down there, there might be some eagles or hawks that would hunt these guys. So they do have to be careful, and that's why this coloration on these birds, these brightly colored parrots, help camouflage a little bit in the sunlight, the green trees, and so forth when they're flying.
Now, do they fly gracefully?
Awesome.
Really?
Awesome.
Because it looks like kind of a lumbering type of bird, you know?
They make a lot of noise. They don't make real tight turns like a falcon and that, but they're really cool to see, and they maneuver a lot better than you might think.
Do they fly at their in their cage or wherever you keep them over at the zoo?
Actually, you know what? I run an outreach program, so we go out and do schools, all types of civic events, and we take them out, and one of the things we do in our show is fly this bird. So we want people to see what it's like to have a bird like this fly over your head almost as if you were in Brazil or somewhere down in South America.
See if you can train it to fly into Dan Bennett's office.
We might be able to do that here after the segment.
Hey, are you the hard line?
Step up. All right, you guys want to see a toad?
Yeah.
All right. Here's the deal. I want to mention again the zoo run is happening tomorrow. If people want to run, come out there. Maybe a little. We're not sure the weather's going to be good or bad, but either way, we're going to run it. And it's one of the big fundraisers that we have. It's also, we also on May 6th have a golf tournament. So if anyone is interested in golf, wants to come out and support the zoo, Doral Tesoro out by the Texas Motor Speedway, we're going to have...
Oh, don't tell me golf takes priority over the zoo, too.
Not priority.
No, not priority. Not priority. But it's going to help. Everything that everybody who supports our golf tournaments and our zoo runs, all that money is going back to help the Fort Worth Zoo out, make the great exhibits, and maintain the animals as healthy as possible.
All right, now there is a frog.
Toad. Is a big, fat toad.
Well, now, see, that's when you say toad, I was thinking we were going to have a horny toad.
Well, yeah. I thought about it, but they're not so,
dear God, but I'm horny.
TCU has, obviously, that's their mascot, is the horned frog. We have one at the zoo we don't bring out as often. In fact, it's a good segue to talk about two things. Number one, this is the marine toad. This is the toad. Did you ever read about the kids licking the toad to get a high?
Yeah, to get a high. Yeah.
This is the one.
I've licked thousands
of them. Have you really?
No.
This is a hallucinogenic property that they produce. Now, they have been taken, they're now found in South Florida, normally in Central America. They were taken to Australia. And the toxin on the back of this toad is strong enough to kill a dog or a cat should they bite into it. It's that powerful.
So if I lick the belly, is it the belly?
You're on the floor in about probably 10 minutes.
Well, I thought I'd catch a big buzz.
Well, you might, but you might catch worse than that.
Oh.
Yeah, you might be face down. That is very powerful. In fact, I knew some guy that was a herpetologist that touched one of those to his eyes after it secreted something from those glands, and he went temporarily blind.
Okay, so let's just say that obviously that's their best defense, but... How do animals know that?
They don't. That's the problem. In Australia, this was an introduced species. It was called the cane toad. They took it there because cane beetles would prey on their crops. And what happened is now they're all over the place. And the dogs and cats that go in there, they don't know any better. They grab a hold of the toads, and next thing you know, they drop dead. The same thing with the fire ant. The fire ant is one of the major reasons why we don't have horned lizards and horned toads here anymore.
All right, so should I wash my hands?
Absolutely, yeah, when you're done. Don't squeeze them too hard, because that stuff will come out all over you.
Oh, don't worry, I won't.
But toads will do three things. These toads will do three things. They'll either inflate themselves up with air to make themselves look bigger, they'll go to the bathroom all over you, or they'll secrete that stuff from their glands. So
I'll
that's how they defend themselves.
Go to the bathroom all over me, because I'm used to that with Mike anyway. Mike, you want to hold the poisonous toad?
No, I don't want to hold the poisonous toad. I fear the poisonous toad.
So the point being is that it's just like the nutria, like that big rat you see in Louisiana's introduced species, the fire ant is. You don't take animals out of their native areas. It causes all types of problems. Right now, they run them over in Australia. I mean, I've seen video before. They just deliberately try to hit them out in the road, everyone they can. Like, and that's because basically we caused some problems with introducing species that shouldn't be where they should. So anyway, I'm going to put this bird down now because I want to get this snake out.
Okay.
This is a 10-foot Burmese python.
They're
calling for it.
Ready for it?
They're ready for this.
10-foot.
It's 10-foot. It is not nearly as big as it's going to get.
Drago, you ready for this?
How come?
They just scare me. I got bit by a copperhead when I was a kid.
Oh, well, that'll do it. That'll do it. How about what's happening out in the community right now with that cobra?
I hope they kill it.
No. Snake.
Well, I mean, it's not the snake's fault. It was the owner who brought it
in.
Yeah, right?
Grego.
However.
Poor snake. All he wants to do is eat.
However, this snake we have here is non-venomous. So it doesn't mean it can't bite. All snakes have teeth. Just some have actually the ability to secrete venom into it. This one is just a constrictor, which means it wraps around you and hugs you to death.
Now,
is he likely to bite?
Probably not. Well, I'll tell you what. I didn't know this when I picked him up today. He is starting to shed. Do you all know what happens when
molt.
A snake sheds? Molts. What happens is snakes don't have eyelids.
Yeah, Corby does that.
Right.
When you shed, Corby.
Once a quarter,
the skin over your eyelid goes blue, so you can't see a thing.
And he sheds when the ratings book comes out.
So when this thing starts to shed, he can't see, and he'll start to get an opaque or bluish color.
Uh-huh.
So you want to hold this, or seriously?
I mean, can I?
I'll bring him over.
Sweet Lord. This thing is...
Oh, my goodness. You have a...
Oh, my God.
Oh, wow. Look at that.
The Burmese python, right, Sean?
Burmese. Tell them all about it.
All right. That's all I know.
Oh, it's heavier than a sack of potatoes. What's this thing weigh, Sean?
He's about 40 pounds before he eats.
40 pounds. And what does he eat?
Right now, rodents.
Rodents.
Oh,
well,
ooh,
look out for my head.
Get a hat on. Rodentia.
You, Grego, this thing... is amazing.
Roy, you would be freaking, Grego. You couldn't be in the room with this.
No, you couldn't. In fact, these things get so big that, just to give you a perspective...
All right!
The head on this snake will get the size of your hand. So when he's full grown at 16 feet, he's going to grow another 6 feet, fill out even more. His head will be as big as your hand, and they can eat something the size of a pig. In fact, I've seen pictures... I'm not kidding you. I've seen pictures before.
I've told y'all that before, and y'all won't believe me.
They don't.
Y'all didn't believe me when I said it.
Burmese pythons and reticulated pythons from Southeast Asia can eat wild boar, and they have shown that these things swallow something twice the size of the biggest part of their body. It sits in there and takes sometimes 6 months to digest, and literally the snake can't go anywhere, so it's defenseless at that time. They can't move.
Now, how long do those live?
They easily live over 20 years in captivity, 30 years. Some snakes, some of the big snakes can live over 30 years. That's pretty old for a snake, but the reticulated python is considered to be the longest snake in the world. There's reports that say they've reached 25, 30 feet in length. The biggest, heaviest body snake is considered to be the anaconda. All three of these snakes, though, can swim, which is odd. People think they just hang out in the trees or down on the ground on the floor. They literally have the ability to swim, and they're excellent swimmers.
It's just so solid. I mean, I guess that's because it's one giant muscle, but, it's such a beast,
snake.
Man.
Grego, you know, you're not taught this is something you're taught to fear. You're not born with it. So you had an experience with a copperhead. Lots of people out there do. From what I've understood, the fear of snakes is called ophidiophobia.
So I've got it, whatever it is.
You've got it, ophidiophobia. And so when you see something like this, it's natural to be fearful of it. But if you see Cobra right now handling this thing, it's really pretty simple. The snake's not aggressive at all. He's not trying to bite.
Snake.
No.
Snake.
Although,
I am out.
Grego, right now he is staring me right in the face about 2 inches away.
Oh, he is wrapping himself around your microphone, Grego.
Exactly.
You would pass out.
Yeah, he's wrapped around your mic stand, Greg.
They lay about 60 eggs for the female. They lay 60 eggs. And the thing that's creepy about them is they have no arms, no legs, no eyelids. They smell with their tongue instead of their nose, and they don't hear as well. So if you were to come upon a snake, Grego, and scream, it would never hear you. So the best thing you'd ever do...
All right!
As
I'd scream, they might hear me.
What'd you say this thing weighs, 40 pounds?
He's about 40 pounds. He feels heavier, though, doesn't he?
Yeah, because he's
grabbing you back.
It's like picking up a mattress.
How often do you feed it?
He eats once every 2 weeks. However, there are...
What do you feed him?
He eats rats and mice, rodents.
Big rats?
Pretty.
I mean, a sizable fist
New York
size?
City size. Yeah. Rat, big ones, yeah. Jumbo rats. He'll eventually progress to something bigger, the size of rats.
Now, do you give him live rats?
No.
Or you give him dead rats? Okay. Does he still treat the dead rat the same way he would a live rat?
Yeah, it's important that we do that. And in all seriousness, for people out there who are wondering about that, we can't feed live animals like that, because if we did... They have a potential to hurt the animals. So then you have to call your vets in to take care of something. It should be an easy process feeding out an animal. So we feed them. They're frozen. Someone's making a killing out of these frozen, thawed-out rodent orders that we get. But they're literally... are you okay? Okay. So, yeah, we do basically feed out non-alive animals, I should say.
What an amazing creature this thing is. And really docile, too.
He's great. In fact, and that's the thing that people need to see. I wish Greg was here, because he might have a different appreciation for him just seeing this and knowing that.
I doubt that.
It's not going to be aggressive towards
him. Well, the enormity of it. I mean, it's so big, and it's going to get double the size?
Well, yeah, add another 6 feet onto that, and that's what you end up with.
Good Lord, man.
You know, you could set $1 million cash and that snake on top of it, and I wouldn't grab $1.
You want to hold it, Mike?
Come on, take the tail of it.
Lindsay, hang on.
You
are a tiny woman. Let me help.
I want to point out, too, we have 2,000 animals at the Fort Worth Zoo. It's like a maternity ward out there right now. We have baby spoonbills that were just hatched out. We have 4 lesser flamingos. We have a blue crown pigeon and 2 jaguar cubs that people can come out and see. And Mike has it around his neck right now. How's it feel?
Oh, that a good puppy dog.
It's not a dog.
Oh.
Look at that. How creepy. Grego, it is completely wrapped around his upper torso. I mean, like, has him swallowed, essentially. If that thing wanted to constrict him,
it could.
It'd rip your Mr. Burns heart right in half.
Are we getting pictures of all this?
Oh, we're getting a million pictures.
Oh, yeah.
We're getting a million pictures.
There's 80 teeth in its mouth, approximately. They're all shaped like fish hooks, and so when they grab a hold of something... And they try to pull away, they just sink in deeper. And what happens is, what he's doing to Mike right now is he would wrap his coils around and suck the life right out of him. And so that's basically how they hunt.
Well, what prevents him from doing that right now?
Well, he knows that Mike is food.
Two things, basically, Greg, is that snakes and animals alike, if you don't go up and touch a wild animal, you're not going to scare it. They have a natural apprehension towards people. The other thing is, as long as he's fed and healthy, he should have no reason to bite. So if people can understand that animals usually only bite out of aggression or maybe from a food drive, then it should be okay.
It would bite me if I'm there, because I'm an enemy of the snake.
No, you're not.
I'm a big enemy of all snakes.
Let me ask you this. Could you even be in the room with this
snake? No, I don't think I could. I don't think I could.
I don't think you could either.
Really?
You know, Greg, if Greg were here and he were still in here while this is going on, I'd be very surprised.
I mean, I'm deathly scared of snakes, all of them. I mean, even little garter snakes, they might as well be a copperhead.
Now, is this any relation to the Alabama black snake?
I'm not sure. That's out of my expertise, but...
it was just a question.
Yeah, could be.
You know, I just noticed his eyes. They are blue.
Yes, they are. And that's like I said, real common. That's skin over the eye that they'll shed off. And when he starts to shed, most snakes will find a rock, they'll rub their nose on it, and they will wiggle out of their skin. And what will happen is you'll be able to see the actual eyelid or eye cap coming right off, and then eventually they'll be just beautiful snakes.
Wow.
Now, what happens over at the zoo, like, when you guys go around each day to check on the animals and you find a dead one somewhere?
Well, luckily that doesn't happen very often. But, you know, it's something that we have an animal health center there that mm-hmm. is, we have some of the best vets. We have a state-of-the-art health center there that if something happens where an animal's sick, goes right over there, they can treat it. We have a team of vet techs, quarantine rooms, operation rooms if we need to. So we have everything available. And if that happens or something gets sick, it goes to the hospital and is assessed there. And that's pretty much how we work. We're also one of the few zoos in the country that has a nutritionist on staff. We have a full-size commissary where all the food is prepared during the day, is delivered at 6:30, 7 o'clock in the morning, and is out and ready when the keepers come at 8 o'clock. So it's a really neat facility we have over there.
I'm telling you, the Fort Worth Zoo is the greatest.
Thank you.
And Fort Worth Zoo is amazing.
Yeah,
everything you're telling me doesn't really surprise me.
I think I heard this thing make a noise. I think it did.
It could have made a hissing noise.
Yeah,
snakes
like
are known
that.
To hiss a little bit. That could be just some of the air moving through them as you're holding him. But I don't think he's gonna. I don't think he's not showing any aggression. He will, Mike. If he gets scared, he will grab you so hard you'll turn as blue as your shirt. So that's
comforting.
We'll know that. You'll be fine though. He's not going to.
You might want to put the snake back in the box, right?
Well, guys, thank you so much.
Sure.
Yeah, this has been really great.
Yeah.
John, Lindsay, thank you guys a whole lot. And hey, everybody go to the Fort Worth Zoo. You got the Fort Worth, the Zoo Run coming.
Zoo Run tomorrow. If people want to come, please register from 6:30 to 7:45. And May 6th, if you want to play golf, it benefits the zoo, call us up.
All right. Very good. That is Sean and Lindsay from the Fort Worth Zoo. Everybody get over there and check it out. It is a fine, fine zoo. All right, coming up next, I believe we're going to see if we can't link up with Norm, and we're going to talk a little NFL draft with him here on The Ticket.